JC Corcoran Podcast.
I'm really fond of 87 when it was the last month of the season and I had come back from my dad's funeral and my first game back in Busch Stadium. Whitey threw me back in the lineup and I got a couple hits and the fans really were very supportive of me during that difficult time. That's probably my most treasured moment with the Cardinals, the support that I got from the fans coming back from my dad's death.
Quickly regarding Field of Dreams, did you guys have any idea what you had when you were filming, or did you even have any idea that you would get the kind of overwhelming reaction out of the male audience?
Of course. I never guaranteed that it would, you know, how many people would see it, but I felt that any man who saw that movie would be extremely affected by that movie. And I knew that the minute I read it.
Phil Alden Robinson directed Field of Dreams, and he told me some of the behind-the-scenes stories that went into the making of the movie.
The music was so instrumental to creating moods and really kind of complimenting the film.
Yeah, it's beautiful. James Horner is a wonderful composer, and I'll tell you a quick story. The first time that I showed the film to anybody who had not been, you know, privy to the dailies and the shoot was when I showed it to James, who was the composer. And at this point, this is in post-production, we had a rough cut of the film. I was very, very nervous. In fact, I really thought that it wasn't very good. And I just didn't know how to make it any better, and I just was throwing up my hands and saying, well, I guess this is all it'll ever be. And James came in to look at the picture to decide if he was going to score it. And I showed the film to him and his agent. And when the lights came up, the agent turned around and said, gee, Phil, it's really wonderful. I really like it. I said, oh, thanks very much. And I'm thinking, well, he's an agent. He's going to say these things, you know. And James didn't even turn around. And I'm talking to the agent, and James is still not turning around. And I'm thinking, oh, no, he hates it. And he's too embarrassed to turn around and even and say, gee, thanks, but no thanks. And finally, the agent says, Jamie, what do you think? And without turning around, James said, would you excuse me for a second? And he got up and left. And I thought, oh, my God, this is just a disaster. He can't even say thank you. And the agent looks at me and he says, I'm sorry, I don't understand, I'm sorry. He goes out in the hall, comes back in a minute later, and he says he's standing out there crying. And it was an electrical moment for me. And James came back in the room, wiping tears from his face, and he said, I'm speechless. And I said, gee, you don't have to say much, just say yes. And he said, yes. And that was the moment when I realized that we had something. I'll never forget that moment. It was absolutely sensational.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
And not long ago, a whole busload of us from St. Louis made the trip to tiny Dyersville, Iowa, home of the actual movie site, which, by the way, is still immaculately preserved and which hosts close to 50,000 tourists a year.
Last night, we came out at sunset. Maybe five other people out here. And it was incredible. That was more like the movie. You could actually see. And the sunset over the cornfield was gorgeous.
My family and I went to Galena, and then we came on over here.
Pretty nice place, huh?
It's very nice. It gives you chills when you turn in the driveway, doesn't it?
This is unbelievable. It's a dream, just like the movie.
I drove up. We came back from Niagara Falls on a honeymoon on the tail end of it, and we came up here.
Did you know this was going to be part of the deal?
Yes, it was an arrangement.
What do you make of all this?
I think it's great. It's everything I thought it would be.
How about you?
Yeah, it is. Lots of pictures, lots of good times. It really is.
Have you been walking around out in the corn yet?
Yeah, we've been out in the corn, out in the field, playing some infield.
And so, from the pitcher's mound here in Dyersville, Iowa, so long, St. Louis, from the Field of Dreams.
Well,
following that trip, I met director Phil Alden Robinson.
What's your reaction to all that, and what do you think we're being told by that?
So little of what we have a chance to do is real and organic and touches the soul, and I think that people are really hungry for that. And I think that going to this ball field and fathers having a catch with their sons is a very sweet thing.
Unbelievable.
It's more than that. It's perfect.
No, it's Iowa.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022, 256 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. How you doing, kids? You're at jcontheline.com, and here we go. Yeah, I played that baseball thing because that's sort of like the romantic view of baseball. I don't need to tell you that. There are a lot of us that still have sort of an emotional connection with the game of baseball. It isn't just a business, or it isn't just a game. It's a lot more than that. We've made it important, and now it is an important thing in a lot of our lives. You know, when the word came down yesterday that the work stoppage was going to continue and the lockout was going to continue, you got to be careful which words you say here because people get testy about it. It is technically a lockout. Some people like to, respond in the comment section on social media. Who cares? Who cares? Well, a lot of us care. It's really easy to stand there and just say, who cares? First of all, if I bothered to acquire the story and I have chosen to post it, then a lot of us care. You know, when they finally do start playing again and the Cardinals put together another 18-game winning streak like they did last season, trust me, you're going to fucking care. Today is Ash Wednesday. Speaking of people who make things important, religion is important to a lot of people in these rituals. Boy, rituals really are important in religion. Coming up here in a couple of minutes, I'll give you my review of The Batman. Opens Friday at a theater near you. State of the Union last night. I can't say that I watched the entire thing. It was, an hour and 2 minutes was the speech. But, they have a pregame show and a postgame show. And if you were watching, there was one point in the speech where, what was the guy's name? Joe Wilson? I think he was from South Carolina a couple of years ago, yelled at Obama during the State of the Union address. And people were like, Jesus, is this what it's come to now? You're going to start heckling the President of the United States at the State of the Union address. And it happened again last night. And one of the things I noticed is at the beginning, before Biden came in, you had Lauren Boebert and you had Marjorie Taylor Greene, and they had their backs turned to where Biden was. Everybody was facing the area where the president was coming down to shoot there, but those two just had their backs turned. Okay, fine. I get it. You go ahead and do that if that makes you feel better about yourself. So when this happened last night, I thought to myself, nah, it wouldn't be one of those two. Well, I was wrong. Here's the president at a very poignant moment where he's talking about soldiers coming home in body bags.
Headaches, numbness, dizziness, a cancer that would put them in a flag-draped coffin. I know. 13. One of those soldiers was my son, Major Boebert.
You guessed it. Lauren Boebert, apparently referencing the 13 American service members killed in that bomb attack in Kabul as the United States withdrew troops from Afghanistan back in August. So when Biden said a cancer that would put him in a flag-draped coffin, Boebert yelled out, you put them in, 13 of them. You imagine having this woman around the house every day? I look at somebody like her and the term justifiable homicide comes to mind. Back to the Major League Baseball thing, no agreement. They're still arguing about things like the luxury tax. first two series. For the Cardinals, that would be Pittsburgh and the Cubs, both road series. Might be a blessing in disguise as far as the Cardinals are concerned, because it's cold at Wrigley Field in late March and early April. Some of the coldest days of my life have been spring games at Clark and Addison on Chicago's north side. Oh, by the way, I forgot I had this. I just thought of it. This popped up on social media a couple of days ago, and I grabbed it, and then I forgot to play it yesterday, but it's probably just as well. I'm going to play it for you now. Here's Harry Carey in his prime. I want to say that this was either late 80s or early 90s, and you'll hear the story being told by Harry himself and also by the guy who was his color commentator at the time in the booth, Steve Stone, former Cy Young Award winner. Here's Harry telling the story about one night in Harry's life.
Well, it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and my car wouldn't start.
Battery was dead. Called AAA. Probably should have called AA. AA. But he called AAA.
So I told him, I said, my car wouldn't start, and I wait for the auto club to arrive.
He saw these two lights coming up, and he thought, boy, this is really quick. Here's the tow truck.
And I see the bright lights pulling up behind me. I jump out. I think it's the auto club.
It wasn't a tow truck. It was two guys.
And both of them with a gun.
Put up his hands. He goes,
hey, fellas, don't do anything you're going to be sorry for.
I'll give you everything. Just relax.
And the one guy looks at me with a gun, and he said,
oh, my God. You're Harry Carey.
And the other guy starts jumping up and down with a gun. Holy cow, it is Harry Carey. It is Harry Carey.
He goes, this is a really bad neighborhood, Harry. You shouldn't be in this neighborhood this late.
They shake my hand, they pat me on the back, and they say, we better vamoose.
And that's exactly what it was for Harry at the time. He was legendary.
He was legendary is right. Oh, and then the other sports story I have is, this is one of my favorite days every year. The FCC releases the numbers of how many complaints they get during the Super Bowl halftime show. For example, the 2020 show, that was the one with Shakira and Jennifer Lopez in those little outfits shaking their booties all over the place, got 1,300 FCC complaints. This year's Super Bowl halftime show, 33 FCC complaints. Moral of the story? We're living in a puritanical society in this country. We love our porn. We just love it where we want it. And apparently where we don't want it is on national TV, you know, free TV. As soon as the game is over, go right to the computer. That is the designated porn area. Let's get that straight. There's a career search website called Zipia.com. And it posted a list of each of the state's most famous movie stars. There's a couple that are, you know, indisputable. James Dean from Indiana, Mark Wahlberg from Massachusetts, although you could make the case for Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Anyhow, California, Leonardo DiCaprio. But there are some weird choices, like in Arkansas, they chose Wes Bentley. Could have gone with Mary Steenburgen or Billy Bob Thornton. In Louisiana, they chose Jared Leto, passed up Reese Witherspoon, Tyler Perry, Stormy Daniels. And here in Missouri, they chose Evan Peters from American Horror Story. No John Goodman, no Don Cheadle, no John Hamm, no Don Johnson. You got to be kidding. All right, primetime tonight, 33rd season finale of The Amazing Race on CBS. Late night, Zoe Kravitz plays Catwoman. Batman, we're going to talk about that here in just a minute. Also, Al Franken. Jimmy Kimmel's got Nick Kroll. Andy Serkis. Russian expert Fiona Hill at a 15th anniversary celebration of Ben and Jerry's Americone Dream featuring special celebrity guests. That's all on Colbert. James Corden has Colin Farrell and Patrick Stewart. Courtney Cox pops up with Seth Meyers. Kevin Costner is going to host a 4-part documentary series on Yellowstone National Park. And I didn't even know you could do this. Larry David, there's supposed to be an HBO documentary about him premiering last night, but they pulled it at the last minute because Larry says, nah, you know what? I want to do this in front of a live audience. And HBO said, oh, okay. And they didn't run the show. Boy, you want to talk about clout and pull. Larry David, Jesus. All right, birthdays today. When did this happen? Robert Eiler. Anthony Jr. on The Sopranos is 37. Ben Roethlisberger, Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, 40. Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter, 41. Rebel Wilson, 42. Chris Martin from Coldplay, 45. Daniel Craig, James Bond, 54. John Bon Jovi is 60. Dale Bozzio, wow, back in the day as the lead singer for Missing Persons. She is 67 today. Lorraine Newman, formerly of Saturday Night Live, is 70. Mikhail Gorbachev, interestingly, being listed here as a show business celebrity. Former Soviet president, 91. It was 60 years ago today. Wilt Chamberlain, I guess you could say, had a good night, scoring 100 points against the New York Knicks. This is Spinal Tap, opened in American theaters on this date in 1984. And it was 39 years ago today in 1983. CD players and discs were released in the United States for the first time. It's got to be pushing 80 degrees. Yesterday was 76. Normal for this time of year in St. Louis is 51. All right. So there's going to be a lot of places that are going to break the 80 degree mark today. Keep in mind, we have a severe weather threat that seems to be developing for the second half of the weekend. Last night when I checked it, it just looked like a ton of rain and some possible severe weather, especially late Saturday night and then into Sunday. Looks like they have slid that down a little bit, and it's going to be more like Sunday into Monday. And we're on the rain-snow line. So this could end up not being rain, could end up being snow. Let's just, suffice to say, something is going to happen here, especially the second half of the weekend, that you might not like. And let's just leave it at that. We'll get an update later in the week. All right, let's talk Batman. I saw it last Thursday night. You know, the appetite of the young male American film goer for Batman movies is really beyond me. You know, it just seems like every few years we get a new actor in a rubber suit, another actor taking the definition of psycho to a new extreme. You get a fresh set of special effects and loud, loud noises, and a new way to show the tormented, brooding central character attempting to deal with the violent death of his parents when he was a young boy. If that's your thing, you're going to probably like the Batman. This time it's actor Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne. He plays the character like he's trying to make the Christian Bale version of the Caped Crusader look like Richard Simmons. I mean, this guy is dark. I sort of gather that when a new actor comes along to play this lead role, part of the game is to not do anything to embarrass yourself or to alienate the capricious fan base of the Batman franchise. You really got to be careful. But Pattinson does more than that. I mean, he's captured this character's essence, and he really puts his own spin on it. If the movie poster didn't identify Colin Farrell as the Penguin, you probably wouldn't recognize him. And John Turturro is at the top of his game as this gangster Carmine Falcone. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get an Oscar nomination. In fact, this cast as a whole really is good. Paul Dano is really good as the Riddler, and you'll have a hard time taking your eyes off Zoe Kravitz as the other mysterious creature of the night in a rubber suit, even if her 5'2", 112-pound frame makes it a little difficult to accept the idea she could bust the heads open of John Cena, The Rock, and Bruce Lee all at once. But there's some lively sexual tension in there, too. Sort of nice. The movie is too goddamn long. It's almost 3 hours, and it is unnecessarily almost 3 hours. Director Richard Reeves, coming off War for Planet of the Apes, apparently doesn't believe in humor or laughter or smiles or lighting, apparently. Most of the movie looks like it was shot during a power failure. Did I mention the movie is dark? Okay, anyhow, the unpredictable quirkiness of the Batman crowd notwithstanding, I sort of think that the latest edition is going to deliver a healthy pow, biff, and bam to critics of the movie. 4 out of 5 quirks for the Batman. 4 out of 5 quirks for the Batman. It opens on Friday.
The A-List interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
The one true Batman, Adam West, the Tales of the Batmobile.
In full costume, sometimes would take that thing out on Sunset Boulevard and just kind of drive around. Is that true?
Well, it was the only way I could get a date. I cruised Van Nuys Boulevard Saturday night.
Burt Ward wrote a book a couple of years back. That didn't really set very well with you, did it?
He was so jealous because my bat pole was bigger.
No!
You know, the one I had the suit on last night again, and it fit, and we got results.
we got results.
I love these stories about famous, iconic motion picture roles that were turned down by one actor and then picked up by another one. You remember the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze? Well, the studio's first choice was actually Bruce Willis, but he turned the role down because he didn't understand how it would work with the main character being dead for most of the movie. And then Patrick Swayze came along and said, I'll take it. And then 9 years later, Bruce Willis starred in The Sixth Sense. So I guess he figured that part out. If you've ever wondered why the Vlasic Pickle mascot, I guess you would say, product spokesbird, is a stork, is because storks are associated with pregnancy, and Vlasic wants pregnant women craving pickles to choose their brand. A new study in China found nostalgia works almost as good as pain reliever. For example, flipping through an old photo album might make your back hurt less or help get rid of a headache. Researchers put people in MRI machines and then they measured their brain activity while they looked at pictures from an average childhood, stuff like candy and cartoons. Meanwhile, they used a small device to lightly burn their forearm to see how painful it was, and it hurt less when they were looking at nostalgic images. But photos of modern day stuff didn't have the same effect. So why did it work? Well, the MRI found that when they're looking at photos from the good old days, there's less activity in two parts of the brain that perceive pain. So in other words, it distracts you so much, you just don't notice the pain. Now, it's not going to work for severe pain, but it might work for things like headaches, which is good because being nostalgic is easier on your liver than pain meds are. One nice thing about a lot of people working remotely, working from home as a result of the pandemic, is that you get to use your own bathroom, because I don't think I've ever worked at a place that didn't have at least one bathroom that people just didn't even acknowledge. It was so awful. When I was doing the morning show along with Carl and Laurie Mack and Jen Sparks and the U-Man, we had a bathroom right around the corner from the studio, but nobody ever used it. We went down the hall, up the stairs to the big bathroom because the little one that was really, really close right around the corner from the studio was disgusting. We used to call it the gas station bathroom. I don't know why, but it was always awful in there. And you used that bathroom as an absolute last resort. But one of the funniest things I remember, the studio right across the hall from us was something they call a production studio. There was no radio station operating out of it. People used that studio for pre-recorded stuff before or after their shows. So you could do commercials in there, you could do promos in there, anything you had to pre-record. So oftentimes we would use that studio. The radio station would offer that studio up for broadcasters who were on location. So for what it was, Laura Ingraham was in there once. We just like stared at her, but she pretended she didn't see us. And then the other guy who was in there was Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity's in there. So apparently one morning he's broadcasting out of that studio and he's got to drain the dragon. He goes to commercial and goes running down the hall, around the corner, and into the gas station bathroom. He does not, however, lock the door, which we know because an unsuspecting Katie Cruz came walking down the hall, opened up the door, and there's Sean Hannity with his pants around his ankles. I suspect Katie was not the only person who's ever seen Sean Hannity like that. I bring up that story because, God, keep doing what you're doing and avoid that one stall in public bathrooms. And you know what I'm talking about. In fact, there's a new poll that found that one stall gets a lot more traffic than the others. Over 2,000 people were asked this question. If you walk into a public bathroom and there's three empty stalls, which one do you use? The one closest to the entrance, the middle stall, or the one farthest away from the entrance? Obviously, the middle stall isn't popular, and the first stall isn't either. People were three times more likely to choose the stall farthest from the door. 15% would use the one closest to the entrance, another 15% said the middle stall, and 47% would walk a few extra steps and use the one farthest from the door. The remaining 22% said they didn't know, and it is sometimes just that tiny little bit of hesitation that can make all the difference in the world. This kid's going to be grounded until he's 40. A 9-year-old in Brazil ran away Saturday morning, snuck onto a flight at a nearby airport, and flew 1,700 miles to visit family without telling his parents. His mom realized he was missing, called the cops. She didn't find out what happened until the airline called about 10 o'clock that night to let them know that the kid was okay. And how has the pandemic changed your daily habits? People in Saudi Arabia are sleeping more. People in Australia are drinking more. People in China are exercising more. And people in Mexico are eating better. Biden talked about inflation last night. Interestingly, inflation has not hit the weed industry. Cannabis prices are actually going down. And if you have one of those blankets on your couch, you might want to throw it in the washing machine, okay? Because they can take in a lot of food and dust and pet hair and bacteria. Experts say you should really wash them every week or two. All right, thank you again for the kind words about yesterday's conversation we played back with Roger Daltrey of The Who on Monday. It was Bob Seger, and I wanted to make sure we got a woman into the mix here because I have chosen one iconic show business superstar, rock star type person to feature every day this week on the podcast. And I chose this one because she had been on my bucket list since I was in college, and that's Linda Ronstadt. And while her name was on the bucket list, I also knew from having talked to a lot of people that she is a difficult interview, that you really got to be careful what you say to her and how you say it. And you'll hear a couple of points in this conversation where you can tell her back went up. But I've always loved Linda. I've always loved her singing, and it was worth the shot. Sometimes you just got to say, I got to take this chance. And so I did. This goes back about 7 years at the point where we were just hearing about her Parkinson's and how it might impact her career. Of course, now we know that she's never going to perform again, and it's a degenerative disease, so she'll get worse before she gets better, and it's a really, really sad thing. But 7 or so years ago when we did this conversation, things still weren't too bad, so we were able to have some fun too. Here it is, our conversation with Linda Ronstadt.
Linda, good morning. How are you?
Hi, not too bad.
There's so many things I would like to talk to you about. We're not going to have time. Warren Zevon, Nicolette Larson, Albert Brooks, long, long time. Adam Mitchell, who had this amazing song called French Waltz. Your Cub Scout uniform, but let's start somewhere. I want to start talking about the excess. You know, people always talk about the excess in the entertainment business. You know, fancy cars and giant castles, the works. But your book talks a little bit about the often deplorable conditions those same future stars encounter even after you've had a hit or two.
Well, you know, those early days are funny. I mean, no, you know, first of all, it took about, with any business, it takes you a long time to get geared up or anything that you need to learn how to do well. You know, like if you ask a sushi chef, they'll tell you that they studied for 10 years to learn to be a sushi chef. It took me about 10 years to learn how to sing. While I was doing that, I wasn't making very much money. I mean, I didn't get in the music business to make money. I got in the music business to sing. I really was interested in singing. I was interested in the art of music and telling my story and finding an authentic way to do it. And that's what I was doing. But, you know, it's not so glamorous to move every day.
You were hearing one of your first big records on the radio while you were actually in sort of a precarious position. You remember what I'm talking about?
Well, we were going into Hollywood to have a meeting with the record company, and we had heard that they were playing our record on the radio up in San Francisco, but those were the days before, you know, everything just went on coast to coast at all times. Record radio was still regional in those days when it was wonderful, you know.
Yeah.
You remember regional radio, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
It was fabulous. And we were in a car, our old clunker car. We had one car between the three of us that would, you know, have to take us to our gigs and get us to the dentist and wherever we had to go. And it broke down horribly. It was metal against metal, just screaming loud sound that was turning heads in the street, literally. And we got to the gas station, and we had to actually sort of coast into the gas station with this screaming car. And the guy was looking at it and shaking his head and telling us the car was never going to run again. The only thing to do was tow it away to the junkyard. When I could hear the opening intro to Different Drum way in the back of the gas station.
So you're hearing Different Drum, your first really, really big hit song, while your van is broken down.
Yeah, and it was on KRLA, and we knew then that it was on LA radio and that was going to make it hit. But we were just scratching our heads. We thought, well, what are we going to do in L.A. with no car, you know?
You know, in the 70s, the music scene in California was tremendously exciting, but it was also moving very, very fast. As you look back to those days and you sort of reminisce, are there times that are things and events and periods in your life where maybe you wished, and you look back at them now and say, wow, I wish I could have appreciated that more at the time?
You know, you never appreciate what you got. You can't, no wishing amount of wishing for the past is ever, I don't think that we're even a single individual. I think we're a series of editions of ourselves. And, you know, I look back at some of those old editions of myself and go, you know, why didn't you shape up, kiddo? But there's no good in it. You know, you just have to do, you have to try to learn from past editions and try to inform the future edition best you can.
Right now we have this crop of young female singers and entertainers in and out of jail, wrecking their cars, no underwear, sex tapes, drug arrests, practically masturbating half naked on stage. And some people say, well, no, it actually isn't that different from the behavior of women in rock in the 60s and 70s. We just know more about it now because of the internet and paparazzi and on and on and on. So tell me, comparing what you are seeing...
Compared to those girls, I look like the Virgin Mary.
Well, compare the two eras.
Well, why? I mean, you know, it's very different. I mean, we have a different culture now. I don't know what's going on with some of those girls. Some of them have emotional problems and mental health issues, you know, and for which I have extend my most sincere compassion to them. I think some of those girls that you mentioned or that you're referring to are, you know, have bipolar disorder. I don't know. That's a tough kind of a condition to deal with. I don't know. There's less privacy now. But I'm telling you, people seem to think that, you know, life on the road is this one constant orgy with drugs. It's not. It's, you know, working musicians who are very together, the professional guys that are really, really great players that have been playing for years and years and years are very responsible, very reliable guys that have their lives together. And they're highly, you know, their art is highly refined. They've practiced their heads off their whole lives to get as good as they are. And they want to keep their gig. They don't want to blow it, you know. So people out there just basically traveling from city to city trying to put on the best show they can in the most professional manner they can. You know, I'm sure they're weird people and weird band members. It's a hard life, so sometimes people crack up from the strain. But, you know, you just organize your life and you try to do the best you can. It's nothing compared to doing a book tour, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So
two things specifically about you. Dispel these two rumors or confirm them, as the case may be. You were sort of painted as somebody who was sort of promiscuous.
Oh, for my sake.
Not true? Just a lot of boyfriends?
Why are you even asking this question? I mean, it's such a guy thing. Do you have a better question?
Well, I loved everything about you and everything you did, and I was sort of offended by the characterizations back then.
You should go punch the guy in the nose, whoever said that. Now, you know.
What do you want people to come away from with this after they read Simple Dreams? They put it down, they set it on the nightstand, and they say, wow. What would make you happy in terms of what people come away from with the book?
Well, I want them to come away with a sense of my musical journey. What I did was not, I was not the greatest singer in the universe. You know, there were many singers better than I was. But what I did that was unusual, that was different from other singers, was I sang an unusually wide range of material. And I tried to do it the best I can. It would be great if I sang all of those different kinds of material really, really, really well. I thought I did a pretty good job. But there was a reason for those choices. It wasn't arbitrary. All of that music was in my background as a child, but by the age of 10... And I never tried to do any kind of song before I was 10 years old. You know, I never tried to do any kind of material that I hadn't heard by the time I was 10 years old, is what I'm trying to say. So otherwise I wouldn't be able to do it in an authentic way. So I describe my musical journey, how I came upon this kind of music, how I came upon that kind of music, who were the people that I found to help me, to reinforce me, to teach me, to help me learn how to do it really well, and how successful or not successful it was along the way.
Well, we are all sad to hear about what you're having to deal with health-wise these days. We wish you the best. And just, Linda, thank you for all of the great music. And
you're most welcome.
The best to you. Thanks, Linda.
Great. Bye.
Bye.
And by the way, if you like Linda Ronstadt, or even if you're not necessarily a fan of hers, but you like documentaries about music, make sure you get your hands on this thing called The Sound of My Voice. Came out a couple of years ago. It's a documentary about Linda Ronstadt and the end of the road for her singing career, and there's footage. I thought I had seen all of it. I thought there wasn't any piece of film or any great picture that I hadn't seen before. There's tons of stuff in there that's brand new to me. So again, The Sound of My Voice, Linda Ronstadt, really, really worth your time. And with that, We say the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022 is in the can. 256 days remaining in our American democratic system. As we have known it, we'll have another musician interview highlighted for you tomorrow. I'm working on that right now. It's down to the final 2 days. Who is he going to choose? All right, help keep us in the top 10 of all podcasts in the country. That's where we are now. That's where we want to stay. Please spread the word that we are here every morning. We do politics only when it is unavoidable. You may email me at jc@jcontheline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. We're here and free every weekday morning about 7 o'clock Monday through Friday, and we archive everything. If you miss a show, you haven't really missed it, you can go back and pick it up. All right. Going to be warmer in St. Louis today than it is going to be in Florida. You enjoy that because it's going to be a bumpy ride sometime this weekend at some point. Like I said earlier, there could be some severe weather. There still could be some frozen stuff in our future. Remember, traditionally, March is when St. Louis sees its heaviest snowfalls, and there's reasons for that. All right, back tomorrow. Enjoy your day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.